Hello and welcome to ESIP's Global Economy Podcast. My name is Fredrik Eriksson, and today we are going to take a deep dive into the process in the United States over the legality of the so-called Trump tariffs. And with me today to explain what's going on is Jeffrey Schwab, the Senior Counsel and Interim Director of Litigation at the Liberty Justice Center, a public interest litigation firm that works to protect economic liberty, private property rights, free speech, and other fundamental rights. Welcome so much, Jeffrey.
Thanks for having me.
So let me take a moment to set this up first. On April the 2nd this year, the Trump administration announced the so-called Liberation Day tariffs. Since then, there has been a lot of back and forth on the tariffs and how they are applied on other nations. I think most of our listeners and viewers have probably followed this already very closely. Today, we're going to talk about the legality of these tariffs, and Jeff is the perfect man to do this with because he is one of the persons behind the fact that we are now waiting for the US Supreme Court to rule on whether these tariffs are legal or not, and precisely whether the administration has the power to unilaterally decide levels of tax in the United States. In this case, which I think is called VOS Selections Inc. versus Trump, Jeff and his colleagues sued the administration and argued that the International Emergency Economic Powers Act does not give the power to the president to unilaterally introduce tariffs in the way the administration did. Jeff and his team won in late May in the US Court of International Trade. And after a process of appeals, the case is now at the US Supreme Court, who had an oral hearing, which was widely covered on November the 5th. So why don't we start there, Jeffrey? Where is the process now, and what is it that you're waiting for?
So we've had oral argument in the Supreme Court. The only thing that is left to happen is the Supreme Court issues an opinion and a ruling on how it will decide whether the tariffs are legal or not. There are a lot of different possibilities on what the court could do. And of course, nobody knows what it will do and what it won't do. But it's not clear to me that on whatever day the Supreme Court rules, that that will be the day that this case is done. There may be other issues. For example, one of the major issues that I think a lot of American businesses are concerned about is whether or not they'll get refunds for the tariffs that they have paid. And the Supreme Court may or may not address that. If they don't, obviously that'll be something that will be heavily litigated by a lot of different businesses. And also the other aspect of this is that although this case deals with the president's use of the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, or IEPA, there are other provisions of law that Congress has passed that allow the president to impose tariffs. Although I think more limited ways, I don't think the president will be able to do what he did here, which is a straight across the board tariff on every country, on every product, with some exceptions. So we'll have to see what the administration does in response, even if we win the case.
Yeah, there has been a lot of commentary after the November 5th hearing, and I've seen even different betting firms that are suggesting that there is a good chance that your side is going to win, Jeff, on the basis of the type of questions that some of the Supremes were asking. But if we don't know that, and it's difficult to speculate on these issues. But on the back of, for instance, the decision that came out of the US Court of International Trade, I mean, how would you evaluate the strength of the case that you've made to the Supreme Court?
Well, obviously, we feel like it's a very strong case, and I think it is, and in part because what the administration's position is very extreme. It's extreme in the sense that essentially what the administration is arguing is that it has basically unlimited tariff power. It can impose tariffs under IEPA whenever it wants, on any country it wants, for any reason it wants, and then change its mind immediately for any reason. And over the course of the last, say, 9 months, we've seen that. We've seen the president change his mind quickly on certain tariffs for various reasons, not reasons that are related to the so-called emergency that is required for him to declare to use IEEPA. And so, you know, this is obviously a big problem, because I think the biggest problem for our clients is that because the president claims to have this power, there's a large amount of uncertainty about what the actual tariff is going to be at any point. And of course, that makes it very difficult to run a business. And so uncertainty is very bad for business, because they already are operating in uncertainty. And so for our clients, it's really bad. But in terms of the legal case, I think the arguments are very strong, because nobody has ever done this before. It's unprecedented. And also, the administration is claiming that essentially the courts can't second guess the president no matter what his justification is. And courts generally don't like to hear that they are irrelevant when it comes to whether or not the president is acting outside of his authority.
Mm. And the companies that you represent in this case, can you tell us a little bit more about what are these companies? Are they, I suppose they are companies that import products from other countries, and they have been forced to pay tariffs as a result of the Liberation Day tariffs. What type of companies are we talking about? Is it retail, food, furniture, textiles?
So when we put this case together, we were looking for a diverse range of companies. In general, when I litigate cases, I feel like 3 to 5 plaintiffs is about an ideal amount, just in case somebody loses interest or doesn't have standing to sue. We would have somebody else that would be there to continue the case. So we thought 3 to 5 businesses would be ideal. We found 5. They're all in different industries, and they're all different sizes, but they're what I think most people would call small businesses, under 1 or 200 people. One of our businesses is called MicroKits. It's literally one guy in his loft creating these kits, electronic kits that use electronic parts to make sounds in a way that makes them sound like musical instruments. And he creates these himself and then sells them. And there are kits that a kid or even an adult can put together and make a cool little device that makes sound. So just one guy. And of course, many electronic parts come from Asia. And so his business was significantly impacted. In fact, he had to raise his prices and really like completely, almost completely shut down a lot of his production, meaning that Christmas time, right around now, which is his big time to sell, he didn't have as many units as he normally would have. And so his sales are significantly worse than what he would have predicted starting at the beginning of 2025.
Mm. You've already touched upon some part of the legal argument that you've been making. But if we go to the heart of it, so anyone who has gone through taking a university class in the American political system will know that it's been the standard interpretation that it's the U.S. Congress which makes decisions on tariffs and on the broader adoption of U.S. trade policy. Like many others, there are different type of provisions that enable the executive to take decisions, sometimes to withdraw trade concessions that have been given to other countries in trade negotiations in the past. There are other types of legal grounds for taking different types of actions, and that can be around anti-dumping or investigating general fairness in the broad trade policy setup here. So That's basically also where I think most of the practitioners, where they what they have thought about U.S. trade policy for a long time, that at the core of it, it's the U.S. Congress that makes these decisions, but there are some exemptions here that can allow the administration to take certain type of actions. And here we have now a decision which was not made by U.S. Congress, so it's not a tariff package with congressional approval. So is that the heart of the case, right? And I assume it's that is your principal case against the administration.
Yeah, that's right. I think at the basis, at the heart of the case, is the fact that the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, gives Congress, not the president, the power to impose taxes and tariffs. That's pretty well established. And of course, it has a history. There is a reason that taxes are with the elected branch that is closest to the people, not the executive branch. And that's in our history, in our Revolutionary War history, and the reasons for that conflict. So, So obviously it's very important. And then there actually is a lot of wisdom in that, as we see when you give an executive unilateral authority to impose tariffs. It creates a huge amount of uncertainty because he can change his mind at any time. That's very bad for business. So it actually was a nice forethought, I guess, by the founders of our Constitution, to put it in a branch that moves a little bit slower so that there's more certainty for business. Obviously, I don't think they could have foresaw the enormous global economy that we have today, but it works for it. And also, the way that tariffs have been imposed in the United States has changed since our founding. We did not have an income tax at the beginning of our founding, and the federal government was mostly run on tariff revenue. But that's when the economy was much smaller, the global economy was much smaller, and the government was very much smaller. And so since the income tax, we've shifted away from that policy. And also, interestingly, about the same time, Congress started giving the president more and more power to impose tariffs himself or herself by what we call delegations of power. And but these delegations have had very strict limits. Sometimes they're limits in terms of what the process is. Sometimes they have to get congressional approval. Often they have limits on what the amount can be or the timing. Maybe it only allows the president to increase tariffs or decrease tariffs for a period of 6 weeks or something like that. And so here we have the president interpreting a statute called the International Economic Emergency Powers Act, IEPA, that no president has ever interpreted as giving the president power to impose tariffs at all. That statute's about 50 years old. And I suppose the irony of the case is that statute was in part Congress's attempt to pull back power that the president had under previous administrations, in particular after the Nixon administration, because Congress was much more concerned about the use of executive power after the Nixon administration. And so IEPA was actually part of a series of bills that were supposed to restrain executive power. And the president, ironically, is interpreting them to give him a huge amount of power that is actually given to Congress in the Constitution. So that leads us to our actual legal claims, and we have several in this case, which I think, going back to your question about how strong our case is, I think makes our case strong. As a lawyer, you like to say, well, here are my arguments, and if you disagree with the first one, then you don't. That doesn't matter. Here's the second one, and we have about six or seven where you only have to agree with us on one of them to rule in our favor. And so some of them are basically statutory interpretation. So the first is obviously just IEEPA doesn't authorize tariffs at all. No president has ever said that. It says nothing about duties or tariffs or allowing the president to impose it. It's an emergency statute used for economic sanctions when a particular country has done something that is a threat to some interest that the United States has, and it's been used for that purpose for the last five decades. And so that's, I think, the easiest way for us to win is that it just doesn't allow tariffs at all. Pretty easy, straightforward. But there are some limits in IEEPA. One of them is that the president has to actually declare an emergency. In this case, in Liberation Day tariffs, the emergency was the U.S. trade deficit. Now, we think that's just not the correct emergency. First of all, there's nothing wrong with the U.S. trade deficit. We've had one for about 50 years. It's not been harmful. I'm not an economist, so I'm not going to get into the economics of it. But I think in general, it's pretty well established that at least for the United States, the trade deficit that it has and has had over the last 50 years is not a bad thing for its economy. It's generally a pretty good thing. And so we just don't think it's an emergency. But IEEPA also requires that the emergency be based on an unusual and extraordinary threat. And we don't think there's anything unusual or extraordinary about the trade deficit either. Or even that it's a threat. And so those are three more reasons why a court could agree with us. The president's argument for that isn't necessarily to say we're wrong. It's that it says that the courts can't second guess the president's decisions on those things. The problem with that argument is that basically that would mean that if IEEPA does authorize tariffs, it has essentially no way for the courts to check the president's power. And the president responds by saying, well, Congress can repeal, IEEPA or take action to stop the president if they think he's getting out of hand. And that might be true, except that the president can veto any law that Congress passes. And so for Congress to actually rein in the president, the Congress would have to have a veto-proof majority. That's two-thirds of both the House and the Senate. In our current political economy or landscape, that is basically impossible. And so that means that effectively there's no, under the administration's argument, there's no actual restriction by either of the branches of government. Especially as someone who's a constitutional litigator, think that our three branches of government should be relatively co-equal and be checks on each other so that one of them doesn't get out of hand. I think I personally think that the executive branch over the last several decades has gotten a little bit too powerful. Obviously, we have a history where we're a little bit skeptical of executives that have too much power for good reason, I think. And I think the history bears that out as well over the course of world history in the last 250 years or so. And so, that's very important. Now, all of that is just a statutory argument about what IEEPA allows. If we get into the other arguments, they're essentially what we call constitutional arguments. And that means that even assuming we're wrong on all of those, even assuming the president is correct, that IEEPA does allow this, then what we say is we've got a constitutional issue. And that's because we have this idea called the non-delegation doctrine that essentially means Congress can't just give any of its constitutional powers away to the executive branch without any kind of restriction. So Congress couldn't just say, you know what, we're done with tariffs. Let's just give the president all the tariff authority. In general, our Supreme Court doesn't like that. There's got to be some restriction, some meaningful restriction. And if the president's argument is correct, there's no meaningful restrictions at all. And effectively, the president can do whatever he wants. And that, we think, would create a constitutional non-delegation problem. And along with that, the Supreme Court does not like to interpret statutes that create constitutional issues. So there is a doctrine about interpretation of statutes that says, well, if it would be unconstitutional, then maybe that's not the correct way to interpret it. And so that's sort of our last argument is, even if you think the president's right, it would create this constitutional issue. And so maybe that interpretation isn't correct because of the, it seems unlikely that Congress would just delegate all of its authority to the president, especially in a statute that says nothing about tariffs.
Hmm. And perhaps to put this also in context for non-American listeners and viewers, so your case is not the only case, right, which has been brought against the liberation tariff. So how does your case sit with other cases? Are the different arguments, are they, I mean, of course, they represent different clients, but are they making a different argument than the argument you're making?
Yes, in a way. Our case sued only under the Liberation Day tariff. So that was a strategic decision. We represent five small businesses and just those five small businesses. Shortly after we filed our case, the solicitor generals and attorney generals of 12 states filed their own case saying that they, with very similar arguments, saying that not only the Liberation Day tariffs were illegal, but also the tariffs on Mexico, Canada, and China, the justification which was illegal fentanyl coming into the country. I kind of shorthand those tariffs as the fentanyl tariffs. We didn't sue for the strategic reason that if we're going to say that there's no emergency, it's a lot easier to say that the trade deficit isn't an emergency than to say that fentanyl coming into our country isn't an emergency. I'm not sure that, I mean, I don't think it's an emergency. I don't think it is justified. But sometimes in litigation, you want to get the easiest argument and get a win on the easiest argument. Now, it didn't end up mattering because, as you said, there are several other cases. So there was this other case. There was also a case. Now, those two cases were filed in a court called the Court of International Trade. The Court of International Trade has exclusive jurisdiction over certain trade issues. And in particular, it has jurisdiction over the statutory tariffs. Now, there were several other cases, including a case called Learning Resources that was filed in the district court. I forget which, there are many district courts, but it was filed in one. And there the issue was, well, does the district court have jurisdiction at all to hear this case? Because it seems like the Court of International Trade has jurisdiction, and that's what the administration argued. And so while our case was working its way up, while we had a hearing on the merits before the Court of International Trade, and then we went up to the next court called the Federal Circuit, and now we are in the final sort of appellate court called the Supreme Court, Learning Resources, the district court decided that he did have jurisdiction. The judge did have jurisdiction. Obviously, that is in conflict with the Court of International Trade's decision, and which said we have exclusive jurisdiction. And so they went up directly to the Supreme Court and tried to get an immediate Supreme Court review of that decision. The court initially denied it on an emergency basis. And by the time our case got up through the Federal Circuit and we applied for review by the Supreme Court, they had also applied. And so when the court decided to hear our case and also the case of the states, which by the time we got to the Federal Circuit, had those two cases had been consolidated together, the court also granted the learning resources case. And in theory, the issue that that brings up is whether the district courts or whether the Court of International Trade has jurisdiction over this issue. We think we're correct. And the reason is because the argument for why the district court has jurisdiction is that this is the president's actions are illegal, so they're not really tariffs. And therefore, the district courts have jurisdiction. The Court of International Trade does not, because it only has jurisdiction over over legal tariffs. The problem with that argument is it's circular, because you have to decide the merits of the claim before you decide jurisdiction. That's generally not how U.S. courts work. We want to decide whether the court has jurisdiction before we get to the merits. And so that issue was technically there. And in a little bit of a strange positioning, we are actually on the side of the administration on that argument, and Learning Resources is against us. I think effectively that won't make a difference, at least practically that won't make a difference, because whoever has jurisdiction, I think the court will rule on the merits on one way or the other. Interestingly, the court had zero questions about jurisdiction at oral argument, in an oral argument that was 2.5 hours long. So it doesn't seem like it's an issue that is of real concern to them.
Yeah.
But it is a technical issue, and that shows what, and that sort of explains why we have three different cases actually before the Supreme Court about this one issue.
Yeah. So let's finally assume then that the Supreme Court will principally support your case. What happens then? I suppose your clients have been taxed, in the sense they have been forced to pay tariffs for the goods, and they want their money back, I assume. So is that the practical consequence in the first instance now, that those who have basically received a bill from the U.S. tax authority to pay for the tariffs, they can claim the money back?
Well, it is a little bit complicated, in part because we don't know what the court will do on that issue. There were some questions at oral argument about what would happen if the court ruled in our favor. And I think the court has a couple of different concerns. One is, if they rule that we are correct and the tariffs were illegal, and that the president, or that the administration, the government, has to give all the tariff money that it collected under these illegal tariffs back to anybody who paid it, I mean, that would create a little bit of a bureaucratic nightmare. And also, we're talking about a lot of money. I think my latest sort of guess is like something like $90 billion, something like that. Mm. It's a lot of money, maybe not for the U.S. government, but it is a lot of money. And so that could create a problem. And I think at least a couple of the justices, maybe the justices that wouldn't rule in our favor anyway, were concerned about that sort of mess, including Justice Barrett, who said, what will happen? And then, is it just going to be a mess? And then after the answer of the lawyer, she just said, so basically a mess. And that's a possibility. I don't think it necessarily has to be a mess. The way that the federal government imposes, like actually practically takes the tariff, is that there's an account essentially set up, like basically like a credit account, and everything is recorded. So there should be documentation. I think it's all computerized. And in theory, you just reverse the process and you can give everybody back the money, because when the tariff is imposed, it's coded with the basis, you know, what the basis of the tariff is. So in theory, at least according to some people that I've talked to, it shouldn't actually be that hard of a process. It might be complex because there's a lot of people that have in businesses that have paid the tariffs. But it in theory, it maybe shouldn't be that of much of a mess. What seems like might be more likely is that in American law, in cases, generally a case is just about the plaintiffs in that case. And so usually the relief, except for in extraordinary circumstances, is generally tailored to the parties in the case. Now, practically, sometimes that doesn't make a difference. So, for example, one of the things that we're asking for is an injunction to stop the federal government from imposing tariffs based on this. Now, if the government took that very strictly and said, okay, we won't impose tariffs on your clients, but we will on other people, then other people just bring their own lawsuits and then they would win because the Supreme Court ruled in our favor. So practically, the federal government won't do that. They will just stop imposing the tariffs because they don't want to be sued by 1,000 different groups to stop it individually. So practically, the injunction doesn't matter. But what we're talking about essentially is our damages. And so it's possible that the damages of our clients, the amount that they've paid in tariffs, will be returned to them. But then other businesses that have paid the tariffs will have to figure out a way to get their tariffs back. And generally, that might mean that they have to file their own lawsuits. And in fact, since the oral argument in November, several companies have filed their own lawsuits in the Court of International Trade seeking a refund, including last week, Costco, one of the bigger companies to have done that. So you see, I think, some of these businesses being cautious about whether a ruling in my client's favor is actually going to help them immediately or whether they're going to have to take proactive steps. And so some of them have taken proactive steps just in case.
Hmm. And very final now, I'm not going to hold you for much longer, Jeffrey, but what happens next? I mean, we're waiting for the Supreme Court to make its decision. So, and if I have read the newspapers correctly, we don't know exactly when that's going to be. Some say it can happen this side of the new year. Other people are saying it's more likely to happen on the other side of the new year. So how would that work? Will they just surprise everyone and release the decision, or will you get an advanced warning saying in a week from now the Supreme Court is going to issue its ruling? How does it work?
It won't necessarily be a surprise. Generally, when the court is going to issue an opinion or opinions, it will say tomorrow or in 2 days, we're going to issue opinions. It won't tell you what the opinions are. But I think if the court says it's going to issue opinions anytime in the next, say, month, there's a good chance that it will be our case. I think there's good reason to think that it will be on this side of the new year, in part because how quickly the court took the case. It took it on an expedited basis. Although, you know, it's been 9 or 10 months since the imposition of Liberation Day tariffs, the courts have actually moved on this like pretty fast. Not for normal people that run businesses say this has been slow, and that's true. But for litigation, this is lightning fast. You don't get from complaint to Supreme Court in 9 months in American federal judicial system. So I think the court knows it's an important decision that has a timely aspect to it. So I think it's very, very possible that it will issue an opinion on this side of the new year. And I'm hopeful that it does, because I think that would be better to have it sooner rather than later. But of course, they can do whatever they want. Who knows what the discussion is among the justices? I think that it's possible that there's different reasons for, whichever way they're going to rule. And so there might be different opinions. The more opinions that there are from different justices, including reasons why they disagree with the majority opinion or reasons that they agree, but for different reasons, the longer it will take, because you have more things to write and more people writing them. So that is one thing that could hold things up.
All right, very good. And if it doesn't happen on this side of the new year, so it comes next year, it will, of course, also be the 250th anniversary of the U.S. Declaration of Independence. So perhaps a good opportunity to reaffirm the principle that America is a republic, and it is Congress who makes these decisions, not the executive, not a British king, nor a U.S. president.
Yes, absolutely. We did fight a revolutionary war about an executive having too much power over the American economy, and I think that it's a good point and one that we should, as Americans particularly, who generally like more limited government, at least I do, that is a good opportunity to remind ourselves why.
Very good. Thank you so much, Jeffrey, for taking the time to enlighten us on this, and maybe also wish you good luck with the decision or the opinion coming from the Supreme Court. It's been a delightful half hour that I spent with you now, and I thank you very much for it.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.